Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. This morning, we're circling back to the Wheeler Health Network to help celebrate the recent Connecticut Community Foundation grant supporting Wheeler's Walk With Me program, creating a safe, affirming, and inclusive array of outpatient services for LGBTQ plus people and their loved ones. Then we're going to head back up the mighty Housatonic to catch up with the Housatonic River Association, the decades-long driving force behind the recent federal wild and scenic designation that was provided for one of the most pristine stretches of that waterway. Then we're headed back down south, and we're going to go from the river to the forest, catching up with the Aspetuck Land Trust and inviting you to explore the 2,100-plus acres they manage in southwestern Connecticut while learning more about their Green Corridor Initiative and other cool activities for the spring and summer on their properties. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Hey, April is Alcohol Awareness Month, and the McCall Behavioral Health Network has partnered with number one New York Times bestselling author, speaker, podcast host, and newly appointed McCall board member, Gabby Bernstein, to raise awareness for equitable access to mental health and substance use disorder treatment in Connecticut. To check out the latest podcast, just go to GabbyBernstein.com. Or to talk about getting help or support for someone you know grappling with an alcohol-related issue, get to know the McCall Behavioral Health Network and their services delivered regardless of your ability to pay. Just go to McCallBHN.org. Well, as we mentioned in the introduction, exciting news from the Connecticut Community Foundation and our friends at Wheeler Health Systems. Wheeler received a grant from the foundation recently and their Pride in the Hills Fund to support Wheeler's Walk With Me program, which will enhance the ability and access of a peer support specialist, as well as expanding the parent caregiver services for LGBTQ plus families. So we've got the president and CEO of Wheeler on the line with us today. We went right to the top to talk about this exciting grant, this partnership with the Connecticut Community Foundation, and this very important program based out of Wheeler. So Sabrina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and we are very happy to have the opportunity to continue to expand the Walk With Me program. This expansion does bring the program to our Waterbury Health and Wellness Center located at 855 Lakewood Road in Waterbury. Walk With Me is a specialized outpatient treatment program for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning patients. We serve individuals across the lifespan, and the program offers a full comprehensive array of services from peer supports, which is an individual who has lived experience, who provides community outreach and is able to make connections in order to support individuals with other services and supports that they may need, and also works in ensuring that the community is aware that these services are available and how to access the services.
Well, while we recently had some folks on from the Connecticut Community Foundation, unfortunately, we didn't really talk about this their Pride in the Hills Fund. They're just too much. They're too much going on with that foundation. Their work and their infusion of financial underwriting throughout all the communities that they serve is so robust. We didn't get around to this, but is this Wheeler's first partnership or connection with the Connecticut Community Foundation, or have you guys received other support from them for other Wheeler initiatives?
So we certainly partnered with the foundation in a number of other initiatives within the community, but this is the first grant that we are receiving directly from the foundation.
Excellent. So let's go back to the beginning of your and your team's passion to provide increasing support and to destigmatize and to address these unique and concerning issues that are facing a growing number of members of the LGBTQ plus community?
Sure. So the LGBTQ plus community, as we know, faces a number of discriminations and often has family rejection and a number of other factors that really contribute to negative health outcomes for the population. We at Wheeler looked to address the need that we were seeing across a number of our locations specifically for this population. So in May 2021, through a private donor, we were able to launch our first specialized program in one of our locations in Plainville. And the uniqueness of the program and the uniqueness of Wheeler implementing the program is that as a community health center, we are an integrated primary care and behavioral health provider, which means we deliver all of those services under one roof. So with the Walk With Me program, we were able to really pull together our primary care team, our behavioral health team, our psychiatric providers, and ensure that the entire team worked together to best address the health and behavioral health needs that that LGBTQ plus patients were presenting with.
Well, as your organization and certainly our team here at Connoisseur Media and For the People have been trying to help also break down the stigma and to provide resources and support to the LGBTQ plus community for many, many years. The one reoccurring thing we hear about from the many organizations that provide intake for individuals from those communities in crisis is that so many of them have come out to their families and have unfortunately and horrifically faced rejection. So I'm thrilled that one of the most important components of the Walk With Me program, or at least one of them, is wrapping support you not only provide to the individual, but to their families. Can you talk a little bit more about how your team at Wheeler helps with guidance and strategies to help the families navigate their child's and family's journey, especially if they are kind of in that questioning phase and they're trying to find their true selves?
Absolutely. And so through the program, we offer an array of individual group family opportunities to come together and to be able to share information. And we like to do that in jointly with the patient actively involved. But there's instances where a family member would like to meet with us individually and to be able to gather additional information and ask questions. So we certainly look for every and any opportunity and really tailor our approach depending on the individual who's presenting and what they're identifying as their needs, the supports they need, and then how to jointly with the patient and the family really bring everyone together to be able to provide the support that is needed to be successful and to be healthy and to continue to grow.
Well, it's a little bit of a tongue tire sometimes when we say LGBTQ plus, there are many in the plus category as well. And each of those groups represents somewhat unique needs and challenges. Can you talk a little bit about some of the ways the medical component of this works, or that you bring your medical versus your psychological or social support team to bear? Maybe talk a little bit about some of the things that family members might need to know in regards to the heightened health concerns that members of those communities face.
Absolutely. So a lot of the work we do with families is really providing them information, resources, and supports, and understanding the medical and the behavioral health outcomes or implications for their family member. Mm-hmm. Related to medical services, our medical teams are trained on gender-affirming hormone therapy. They provide specialized primary care that ensures that we work with the patient as the patient's presenting. We incorporate health screens. We look for opportunities to screen, to identify, and to ensure that the patient is being served in a manner that is responsive to the patient's presentation. And that sounds simple, but it does take training and support for our team. We're very fortunate that our medical director, Dr. Ellick, is someone who has engaged in gender-affirming hormone therapy for over 10-plus years and really is a wonderful mentor, coach, and support to our medical team to ensure that we're delivering the best care we can.
Among some of the services that you provide are sexual health screenings. Certainly, the members of these communities are no strangers to various types of health issues, infections, and such. Can we talk a little bit about that, as well as how they can access some of the necessary prescriptions or other medical components that they might need to support their situation through your Genoa pharmacies?
Sure. So when you look at some of the significant health disparities for LGBTQ plus individuals, sexual health is definitely one of those areas of concern. So LGBTQ plus youth, for example, most recently highlighted in a CDC report, had increased likelihood to have unprotected sex, had increased victimization related to sex, and had increased rates of opioid misuse and other mental health issues. And so we do take all of that into consideration as we're developing the services and ensuring that our services are responsive. All of our sites, as I mentioned, our health and wellness centers, our role is to ensure that we can offer integrated care and give patients all of the services and supports that they need under one roof. And as part of that, we do have an integrated pharmacy on site. Genoa Pharmacy is a partner of ours and works hand in hand with our treatment teams to ensure that there's ongoing consultation on medications, access to medications, use of those medications, and really becomes an active member of the treatment team, which is really critical, which means many of our patients, before leaving our facility, are able to leave with their medications in hand and to have any questions or concerns that they have related to those medications responded to, answered to as part of the care that they receive with us. So we do see it as an extremely valuable piece. Another extremely valuable component is if the medications aren't ready, when the patient is ready to leave, our pharmacy, Genoa, does offer same day or next day free delivery to the home. Once again, we're looking to do what we can to remove what we know can sometimes be barriers for individuals to get the care they need and to ensure they're following up with the medications that are needed.
Mm. I guess it's important to assert at this point before we wrap up to remind people that the Walk With Me program is centered around outpatient services, but given the fact that Part of it is the provision of sexual health screenings, HIV treatment, hepatitis C screening and treatment, as well as gender-affirming hormone therapy for persons 18 and older. I imagine an individual who comes to you in the Walk With Me program requires inpatient services, you also work to coordinate that with them.
Absolutely. So we do assess patients and do identify when additional levels of care or higher levels of care or services are needed, and we help coordinate with those external entities to ensure that our patients have access to those services as needed. We then continue to stay linked to those residential or higher levels of care so that when a patient is transitioning back into the community, we're able to have a smooth transition back and be able to pick up the community-based services once again.
I'd like to close in the last couple of minutes that we have with you, Sabrina, to just give you the opportunity to talk directly to two populations. The first is to any member of the LGBTQ plus community who may be listening, to reaffirm the support that Wheeler can provide and invite them to take advantage of Walk With Me.
I would welcome individuals, LGBTQ plus family members, friends, who are looking for services and supports to walk into to Wheeler's Waterbury Health and Wellness Center in on 855 Lakewood Road. We have an open access walk-in model, which means Monday through Friday from 9 to 3. You don't need an appointment. You can just walk in. You will be met by one of our behavioral health clinicians who will begin working with you to develop a treatment plan and be able to identify what other services and supports we can connect you with. We're here, we're available, and we're very proud of the Walk With Me program, which really was developed as a specialty, culturally appropriate track specifically for LGBTQ plus individuals.
Many of the family members who are not judging or rejecting or stigmatizing a loved one who has come out are probably very much on board with everything that you just said. But for family members or others who are perhaps angry or frustrated or confused about hearing of a loved one who is coming out as one of the members of these communities, what would you say to them as we close out our chat this morning, Sabrina?
I would say there's services and supports available for family members, for friends, for individuals, where we can provide the resources, the guidance, and the information needed for individuals to be as available and as supportive to their loved one.
Thank you so much. Wheeler's Walk With Me track is designed to create a safe, affirming, inclusive array of services for the LGBTQIA plus communities and their loved ones, where they can be validated, explore their identities, reduce feelings of isolation, strengthen their support systems, and develop skills to cope with the stress and stigmas they may face. If you'd like more information, you can just go to wheelerhealth.org/walkwithme. Their CEO and President Sabrina Troche has been on the line with us this morning. And also, once again, kudos to the Connecticut Community Foundation that has just presented a significant grant to the Walk With Me program to support the work of a peer support specialist and enhance and expand parent caregiver services for individuals and their families. Sabrina, thank you so much. Looking forward to talk to you again. Well, folks, a few weeks ago, you heard us begin the conversation with the Housatonic Valley Association regarding this excellent designation of a section of the Northern Housatonic River as a wild and scenic, a federal designation. And we're now pleased to bring on the voice of the organization that helped made it happen. Bill Tingley is with us with the Housatonic River Commission. And Bill, let's get right into it, because as we talked a little bit before we went on the air this morning, there's a significant differentiation between the association, which is kind of a nonprofit, more of a promotional machine, with its main focus as being the segment of the Housatonic River we're talking about, and perhaps beyond. Yours is more of a more of an authority, or not a governmental, but not a fundraising nonprofit, right?
We are not a nonprofit. We are appointed by our towns. There are seven towns along the river in this 41-mile stretch that has been designated wild and scenic, and as a part of the partnership program in the National Park Services. And we were founded actually in 1979 in response to an initial look at wild and scenic up here by the Park Department itself in 1978, when they were thinking, hey, this section of the river is pretty beautiful. Perhaps they'd like to be wild and scenic. But to answer your question, HVA, the group I guess that you've already spoken to, is a nonprofit, and they are active throughout the 150 or 160 miles of Housatonic River, and not specializing in the 41 miles that we are. We were formed in direct response, as I said, to this 1979 look at the river by the federal government as being possibly a candidate for wild and scenic. And in fact, the Wild and Scenic Act at that point was relatively new and had been mainly used in areas that were remote and didn't include Connecticut Yankees, if you know what I mean, and private landowners. And so having just gone through quite a, not a battle, but quite a series of agreements and some disagreements when the Appalachian Trail work was done in the late 70s, the local people here in our towns were not apt, not feeling ready to get into any kind of another agreement with the feds at that point, and instead decided, hey, we can take care of our own river. We don't need them. And they formed the Housatonic River Commission.
So at that point, it was a consensus among the leadership of Canaan, Cornwall, Kent, New Milford, North Canaan, Salisbury, and Sharon.
That is correct.
So how did the humble beginnings formulate over the years into what you are doing now with the commission?
Interesting question. So we... we're basically, we're an advisory group, and we have two members from each town that are appointed by the selectmen in each town, or in New Milford's case, the mayor. And we deal with all kinds of issues, anything that's river related in our area. We try to stay on top of, and we particularly try to advise our zoning boards and assorted other regulatory groups in anything that has to do with the river. We were instrumental in getting a continuous water flow with the FERC agreement, 10, 15 years ago. They used to pond water up in behind the hydro plants at Bulls Bridge and Falls Village. And, of course, that would heat up the water behind the pond, and then they'd release this water at peak generating times. Environmentally, it was a pretty much a disaster what they were doing. And it was pretty strange when you'd go by the river when they didn't have the water turned on, shall we say. It looked like a pretty dry river. Now we're getting continuous flow. That was a big, big victory for us in that. And as a paddler, I'm an old paddler. It was sort of contrary a little bit to what the paddlers liked, because they liked having that dependable flow. The fishermen, on the other hand, were very happy to get something that was going to allow fish to actually live and have some aquatic life that would really flourish rather than going through these extreme situations of heat, hot water, water, no water, that sort of thing. And then as we went along over the years, we noticed other rivers in New England that were becoming involved with Wild and Scenic. And we heard some testimony from some of those rivers, and it was apparent that the government, the federal government, had made this act much more user-friendly and much more locally driven. And it basically got to the point where we really started entertaining the concept of becoming a part of this system. We didn't necessarily need, we thought at that time, the resources that come along with it, but now, especially in the last few years, with the amount of usage that's taking place and everything, we're very thankful that this act does include some resources and is going to help us achieve our management plan as we do manage this this river and this section of the river.
Now, do I understand correctly that there has to be a formulation that's shared among all of the involved towns along the Wild and Scenic Stretch, a formal codified manual or plan, if you will?
We have a management plan, actually, and the Parks Department was quite pleased, not only with the River Commission, that we had such a great organization that had been established for so long, and also that we had a management plan. We will be updating that management plan. That's definitely in the works for this year to show. And we do have other groups. HVA is one of five other groups which will be just acting as advisory partners to us as the River Commission proceeds as the group that is managing this.
We're going to take this opportunity to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a few moments with the Housatonic River Association, pick up our conversation and talk a little bit more about the recently earned Wild and Scenic designation. Stick with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Well, gentlemen, I won't be able to hobble along with you, but I promise that I'll be providing some fantastic music for you while you join the Rape Crisis Center of Milford for its 16th annual Walk a Mile in Her Shoes, the International Men's March to Stop Rape, Sexual Assault, and Gender Violence. It's coming up Sunday, April 30th, and registration opens at noon with the walk at 1, stepping off from Lisman's Landing right in downtown Milford. Prizes are going to be awarded for the most funds raised by teams and individuals, as well as some fun trophies for the highest heel, the most creative, and other fun happenings. There's still time to put a team together or participate. If you'd like to register or learn more, you can go to GoRallyUp.com/RCCWalk2023 or visit the Rape Crisis Center of Milford.org website for more details. But it's important to come out and join the fun, behind this important cause. It's the Walk a Mile in Her Shoes, the 16th annual one, celebrating the Rape Crisis Center of Milford and all the great work that they do. I'll be there. You be there and bring your high heels because it's happening on Sunday, April 30th at Listman's Landing in Milford starting at noon. We'll see you there. Thanks for sticking with us. We're talking to Bill Tingley of the Housatonic River Association about this recently federally designated wild and scenic stretch of this beautiful waterway.
This new status.
Do you suspect that as part of the amendments and improvements or enhancements to the management plan, it's going to increasingly or better address the increased usage that you mentioned earlier that I, in fact, saw as I was making kind of Sunday road trips up into Litchfield County during the COVID era, just to get out into the fresh air and get some peace and quiet as I picked my way through double parked vehicles on both sides of the road along some key stretches of the Northern Housatonic in your jurisdiction.
You're doing your homework very well. That's definitely probably our biggest job, our most immediate job, is to create sustainable access that really works and encourages appropriate behavior in certain areas. You know, there are some areas that are great for picnicking and some that are great for fishing and some that are great for boat launching and this and that. And that is a major part of our thrust right now. And I don't know, the federal government wants us to list projects, you know, that we're going to be doing with the money that we're going to be receiving.
Sure.
To manage these resources. And for this first year, we're definitely planning. It's mostly about planning for the exactly what you're talking about, which is really making the access points work and avoiding these situations that you just described where it's just chaos and irritating landowners and of Bighorn for the local elected officials who, of course, are hearing about it. And, you know, we used to have NCON officers from DEEP. I've only been a member of the commission, the River Commission, since 1982. But in those first two or three decades of my membership, we had NCON officers that were patrolling our section of river, and they would come and report to us every twice a year and keep us abreast of what was going on. And now that no longer exists.
Yeah.
And so we're not looking for a big police presence on the river. We're just looking to try and educate people and manage people in a way that they're making good decisions and making it easier for them to recreate safely, equally, and responsibly.
Yeah, I was going to say the commission is quite different than, say, the Lake Zor or the Lake Lillinona Lake authorities, who actually have police officers and legislative wherewithal, or I should say statutory wherewithal, as a result of the fact that they are authorities and not commissions. So,
right.
You know, it's, you know, the saying about a kind word and a gun. So it's
we're really making we want to welcome river users. We really want to provide good access. What I like to refer to as solid access, meaning that it's sustainable and appropriate. Unfortunately, what you were mentioning earlier about double parking and, you know, that sort of thing, just basic trash, people acting in ways that are not really conducive for other people to be around them and that
sure.
sort of thing. We're just trying to keep find the right places for all the different user groups.
Yeah, you want good guests and good good guests and good neighbors all the way
it's
up.
It's like the old days, you know, when the whole thing when people, I think, used to go camping, you know, they'd probably just leave their trash and this and that. And then people figured out, hey, take it in, take it out. You know, there's becomes sort of a coda of the way people are going to operate. And that is something that we need to get going along the river.
Yeah. Well, in the last few minutes that we have with you, Bill, let our listeners across Connecticut, Long Island, and some of the other areas that are listening or who may be listening on the podcast, who knows where, let them know what the message of the Housatonic River Commission is now that you have this heightened national presence as a wild and scenic federal designated corridor.
Yeah, I mean, the status that goes along with being part of this partnership program is significant in the sense that from a river protection standpoint, you know, we are going to be able to have conversations with people that we heretofore have not been able to do. For instance, the Department of Transportation or the Army Corps of Engineers or groups of that ilk that have a lot of power and can often make decisions or do things that are not necessarily in line with what we might see as being the best practice for the river. So we're trying to keep those, you know, not keep them in check, but we'd like to just be able to converse with them. Mm-hmm. That's a huge tool in our toolbox, should we say, in terms of protecting the river. We're really about the river, you know, that's our agenda is the river, period. And we want to make sure that river is going to be, keep it the same. I mean, the river is actually in great shape considering 1978, I was actually guiding the federal people that were looking at it for inclusion at that point. And they were wowed by how beautiful the river was. I mean, there are miles of river, John, up here, where you just could be anywhere at any time in civilization. You know, they're just really, really beautiful sections, and we want to keep those and make sure that there isn't, you know, a 4-lane highway, say, coming from 7 suddenly becomes a super highway along the banks of the river, or you know, something along those lines, or building projects that are just inappropriate, that kind of thing. And also, obviously, the access is key, and just a lot of different areas that we feel that we're going to be able to improve our ability to keep our management plan headed in the right direction.
Excellent. If you're interested in learning more about the Housatonic River Commission, their website is hrcct.weebly.com. This is a regional planning board and advisory body monitoring the towns in the northwest area of Connecticut on issues that involve the Housatonic River. Sorry I left you out, New Milford, Sharon, Salisbury, North Canaan, New Milford, Kent, Cornwall, and Canaan, all now part of this long sought but recently awarded federal wild and scenic designation. And Bill, congratulations to you and your entire team.
Thanks a lot. We'll take those congrats because it wasn't easy.
Yeah, I was going to say
I do want to say that our legislators on the local level and on the federal level were an enormous help in getting this through when President Biden signed that omnibus bill, and that legislation to include us in the partnership program was part of that. It was a very, very happy day for me and anyone who loves our section of the Housatonic.
As I said, a long time coming, but well deserved. And as you aptly pointed out, really one of the most beautiful and pristine places in Connecticut. We hope that the folks who visit there will be respectful and appreciative of that beauty, and even work to try to enhance it more by taking good care of it and being good stewards and visitors, as we mentioned earlier. Bill Tingley with the Housatonic River Commission. Bill Tingley, River Commission. Yeah, we love repeaters, especially when it's an opportunity to invite you out into some of the great spaces in southwestern Connecticut. David Brandt is back for his fourth visit with us here on the award-winning For the People. He's the executive director of the Aspetuck Land Trust. Founded in 1966, this nonprofit membership organization is focused on preservation and conservation of open space, including farm and forest land, and the natural resources located on them for the benefit and education of the people. David, certainly great to have you back. As we mentioned before, the intention was to try to be in person with you, but given the extent that the burst of spring pollen is affecting me in this windowless closed studio in the middle of a big cement building in Milford, being out there in the wild with you probably would have rendered me, you being the host and me just kind of squeaking along with the allergy voice. So great to have you on the line, and lots of things going on. So let's remind people a little bit more beyond that introduction about these almost 2,200 acres that you folks manage down in Fairfield County.
Oh, thanks, John. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, the Aspetuck Land Trust is a regional land trust, and we have about 150 properties spread out over seven towns in Fairfield County. We have 43 trailed nature preserves, ranging in size from 1 acre across from the Pequot Library in Southport to our 1,009-acre Troutbrook Valley Conservation Area in Weston and Wilton, with multiple trailhead parking areas, and that probably gets about 30 to 40,000 people a year visiting. And we have about 20 miles of trails there. We say it's the property where you can be in Fairfield County but feel like you're hiking in the middle of Vermont. So all of our trailed nature preserves are on our website at aspetucklandtrust.org.
Yeah. Oh, fishing season opened up Easter weekend. Do you guys have any opportunities for anglers on any of your properties?
We do. We do have some preserves on the Mill River in Easton, our Warner Anglers preserves. Right on the Mill River, it's up on the northern part of the mill, which is considered a tailwater fishery. So we have cold water coming out of the reservoir, and it's actually one of only, I believe it's 8 wild trout management areas in the state where there's a naturally reoccurring brook trout population. So that's quite an exciting, little wild river in Fairfield County. It is catch and release, though, on that particular river, but we don't have any large open bodies of water for fishing, although we do have a few ponds. Our Butkus Pond in Fairfield has fishing, and it's stocked with bass. But it's a small pond. Mostly neighborhood kids are fishing there.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the big outreach initiatives that you have in the ways that you're partnering with and exposing more people to what the Aspetuck Land Trust is doing, in part with the hopes of maybe inspiring them or somebody that they know to donate land or support the organization. You have this Green Corridor initiative going on. Why don't we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, in 2020, we laid out our vision for the landscape here in the towns that we serve in Fairfield County, and we called it the Green Corridor. And it's basically our stake in the ground that says that, open space is important. We don't have that much left, and we need to protect as much of it as we can before it's developed and gone forever. So the Green Corridor really has two prongs to it. One is protecting land. I mean, we are a land trust. Our core business is to protect open space land for public benefit, for wildlife preservation, and, for hiking, the hiking public. Passive recreation. Mm. So land protection, protecting the last remaining open spaces, in our towns. We identified 42 properties on a little over 800 acres to protect. And to date, we've saved or preserved 177 of the 800 acres since 2020. We've preserved 177 acres. And we're working on another 150 acres right now, active projects. The other piece of the Green Corridor is land stewardship. So what we're really trying to do is figure out how we can have more connectivity in the landscape. 70% of the land in Fairfield County is privately owned, right? So your 2-acre yards, your 1-acre yards. Mm. You know, we have open spaces, whether it's Aspetuck Land Trust open spaces or town open spaces. The Nature Conservancy has, you know, a large open space in Weston, the Devil's Den Preserve. There's other land trusts in Fairfield County that have lands, protected lands. But one of the things that we need to understand is we need to create connectivity in the landscape. So we're trying to engage homeowners to do things in their yards to make their yards a little more ecologically friendly, because homeowners are really the connective tissue in our landscape between our protected open spaces, right? Mm-hmm. And what people do in their yards can make a big difference. And so we laid out this whole program where people can take our Green Corridor pledge to do three things in their yards: basically plant native plants, rethink their lawns, because lawns are, we like lawns. I have a lawn, my kids play in the lawn, we throw the ball on the lawn, but lawns are really a biological dead zone, and it doesn't provide any ecosystem services to wildlife, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why we want people to shrink their lawns, plant some native plants. You plant a native plant, and you know you'll see a butterfly come. I don't know how they know it's there, but they'll find it, mm-hmm. and that provides habitat, you know, and food for insects, which then feed birds, you know, and other mammals. So, you know, we live in this giant food web where everything is connected, and what we do in our yards can really reconnect the landscape together. So it's plant natives, rethink your lawn, and then avoid pesticides, because, you know, pesticides and herbicides are not good, you know, for our environment. They kill insects. They drain into the Long Island Sound. So that's the Green Corridor. So it's about land protection and land stewardship. And part of that is we have this native plant sale. We have a fall and a spring native plant sale. We sold $100,000 of native plants last year to people. Since we started in 2020, we've put 34,000 native plants back into the environment, into people's yards. And it's a great call to action. We have our plant sale open right now, and it will be open throughout next week. You can order your native plants on our website, and we have a pickup in June 9th, 10th, and 11th, and it's in Westport on one of our preserves, so you can come and pick up your plants. But that's really important for us. So we're really trying to figure out how we can engage homeowners who are really landowners. You know, just because you have a 1-acre or 2-acre piece of property and you got a house on it, it doesn't mean you're still not a landowner and that you can't steward your property in ways that support a healthy, connected landscape.
Oh, you sure. Know, just think of if they, yeah, I was, think of transforming, the 12 by 30 foot strip of grass between your house and the fence of the neighbors into a part or an entire native plant situation, you know, a native plant bed, versus, you know, sorry guys, you'll have to put the mower away, I guess, but, no patch of convertible grass is too small, to support, pollinators and birds and other species that help perpetrate the continuation of our environment.
That's right. And with, you know, climate change, you know, that puts more stress on wildlife, on insects, on birds, and, you know, with hotter temperatures, more rain. So anything that we can do in our own yards to make it easier for wildlife to adapt and to have that habitat is really, really important. And the neat thing is, you know, you think about global climate change and all the cataclysmic news that we hear about, you know, globally, you can make a difference in your own yard. And you know, we have 1,500 people that have taken our Green Corridor pledge, you know, to plant natives and rethink their lawns and avoid pesticides. You know, these are small actions that add up
ultimately had a big impact, and our snowball is getting bigger and bigger. You know, there's lots of people thinking about this stuff. There's the pollinator pathway movement. But, you know, we need to kind of take our planet back. And, you know, it doesn't seem like governments are driving the solutions. People have to drive the solutions, and we can do it. We are doing it, you know, in our own landscape here. And it's quite exciting, and people are excited about it.
Well, since you brought up the government, the less than robustly active initiatives at the government level, I have been receiving reminders over the past few days that I believe, and folks, a lot can happen between the Thursday morning when we tape this program and the Sunday morning when it plays, but I think there are the potential of having two Senate bills still active in Hartford, one regarding the fertilizers and such, and another regarding rodenticide poisons that are extremely harmful and dangerous, not only to pets, cats, but also to many of our native bird species.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys doing advocacy on that?
Not necessarily. We do provide information to our members. We have about 1,700 Aspetuck Land Trust members that support us annually. And so we're always trying to put information out to them about what they can do to advocate, you know, for policies that make sense for the environment. And, you know, there's no doubt that government can make a difference through the legislation that they pass. And we can't discount that. And they have made great strides in doing things that, you know, that can protect our environment. But, you know, we really try to, you know, rely on private homeowners and the actions, encourage actions and educate people about things that they can do. You know, we had over 3,000 people attend one of our webinars, you know, over the past year, where we talk about these things. We have a great website where we give people tools on what to do in their own yards. We have our native plant sale. You know, gardening is the number one leisure activity in the country, believe it or not. People spend billions of dollars, you know, on landscaping and plants for their yards. We just want them to pick the right plants and do the right things that don't negatively impact, you know, the environment.
Yeah, the impulse buy of, ooh, that pretty plant could be the bamboo thatch of the future,
right,
on your property, or one of thousands of other non-native plants that can proliferate and really push out or damage the delicate balance of natives, for sure.
That's right.
In the last couple minutes that we have with you, David, are there any specific activities or anything that people can come to you for? You're a membership organization. I'm sure some of our listeners may be interested in going to aspetucklandtrust.org and learning how to be a member, because they've heard something really cool that you've said in this segment. But how about bringing other people to get to know the organization? Any activities coming up between now and midsummer?
Oh, yeah. We have a number of hikes and webinars on our website in the events section. So I encourage folks to check us out. You know, if you're in Fairfield County and you want to go on a hike, you can go and check out all of our nature preserves that are open to the public. If you want to go on an organized hike, those are all on our website, on our events page. You know, we've got a lot of things for folks to do, whether you want it guided or you want to go on your own. The one other thing I want to mention is that we also have made an effort to expand the land trust into Bridgeport. And so we're doing a lot of activities, you know, with folks in Bridgeport. We call it our Building Bridges program. We want to invite more people from Bridgeport to come out to our nature preserves, which are not that far away. We're planting native plants at Bridgeport schools. We're getting kids more involved in nature. You know, it's really important that we expose young people to nature, especially kids, you know, that don't have the benefit of having a woods next door, you know, or a big backyard. So we're excited about that work, because we feel that nature should be for everyone, and we're trying to make those connections.
Well, if you're not already working with our pal Ellie at the Green Village Initiative, we'll have to connect you to by email, because they're doing great stuff as well. And
Yeah.
I think they've got they've got the people who would, I'm sure, enjoy taking a 20 or a 15 minute trip and feeling like they're in the middle of the wilds of Vermont. So
that's right. We do partner with Ellie, and we do know that group. In fact, we've gotten we've taken some of their young people out on hikes on our property.
That's great. Excellent. Very good.
You're exactly right.
Well, we appreciate you chatting with us. David Brandt is the executive director of the Aspetuck Land Trust. AspetuckLandTrust.org is their website. They have been a nonprofit protecting and preserving almost 2,200 or 2,200 plus acres in Fairfield County going back to 1966. They could use your support. Learn more about them at AspetuckLandTrust.org. And David, I promise the next time that we talk, we will do so in person. Thank you.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.